Well, welcome to the Path Forward. We are back. It took us, took me a couple of weeks to get this scheduled. That's why we're doing a recorded version, because our schedules didn't jive. We wanted to do part two and talk through the AI, the coming AI. I should say just AI, because there's so much out there. But that said, we're seeing a I don't want to say troubling trend, but we're seeing a trend moving towards AI. And we wanted to discuss it before we got back to the cyber topics. So this is probably part one of, you know, a few parts, but bear with us. It's been a busy week in the cyber world, busy couple of weeks, actually, because it's taken 3 weeks to get here. So without further ado, let's start with, we were talking before we started this, and you're going down the route of where corporations are going and how it's being sold. To me, AI is being sold like Bitcoin was, right? And blockchain. Like, nobody could really define what it was for the first 5 years, and they still can't really define what it is, but it's like the next big thing that everybody needs to jump on board with. So let's start there, because I know you got a lot of thoughts on this one.
Yeah. So 10 years ago, they came out with this thing called machine learning, and the idea was you take huge amounts of data, you know, millions of lines of data, and build a database, and then you train the computer to look for patterns and stuff. And you know, here we are a decade later, and we have this AI thing. And what I see in the corporate America consulting world, you know, all these global big businesses, the executive staff is just clamoring for AI technology. And you know, some of it's just snake oil. They're putting AI on everything now, and people are gobbling it up. But some of it's real, right? And I've seen OpenAI. Microsoft's got a version of it. Google's got a version of it. OpenAI is ChatGPT. So there's all of these competing companies that are in the US market, and they're adding in their functionality in everything. Like, if you have a Microsoft license for Office, like Office Student or Office at Home, there's an AI button in there now. They've got Copilot embedded in Word when you open up a Word document. And what that means is that Word document you're typing in, it's reading off what you're putting in there and sending it back to the cloud and putting it in a database. And, you know, by clicking that button, you've agreed to do that. And that same kind of thing is being repeated throughout corporate America. And so from a trend perspective, on the one hand, on the corporate side, we see what used to be intellectual property or private information that, you know, I'm going to keep in my grasp, just going out the window. I mean, literally real time, as people are creating intellectual property, it's going somewhere. And then on the government side, you watch the omnibus bill that's going to the Senate right now. And there's specific clauses in there to put in federal law that outlaws restriction on AI, i.e. no guardrails for 10 years. And I don't think that the Senate is going to put that through. They'll probably hide it in other things or change the language a little bit, because that's just reckless. But that there, it's being sold as like, well, China's doing it, so if we don't do it, they're going to leave us behind. Well, the way I see that is it's taking all of the responsibility off the government, right? Because if the law is there's no guardrails and you're a federal employee and you see opportunity, then you can kind of do what you want in theory. And in corporate America, we've got, you know, essentially hooking these pipelines into real-time siphon off information. And so, there's all kinds of ways that could go. But one of the things we were talking about a little earlier was, whether you're a millennial or whether you're a boomer, your whole life is in these data sets now, whether you like it or not. For millennials, I mean, there's everything from, you know, your baby pictures on forward. online in databases somewhere. And if you're a boomer, you know, all of your interactions with the government, tax returns, Social Security information, Medicaid, Medicare, any of those kinds of things. DOGE went in and sucked up all that information, and that's basically, they put it into an AI data set. So, you know, where that's gone, who knows?
Well, the whole premise of DOGE was to collect the data set, put it into Palantir so they could watch government fraud, right? And everybody's freaking out about Palantir. And I haven't really responded until this morning. And here's a couple of reasons why, right? Because Palantir is already an AI. It's been an AI for very, very long. It builds profiles on bad guys, and you know, it's got its uses. But to me, that's not the threat. The threat to me is the fact that AI can do so many different things that people don't see coming. Like one of them is just in the corporate world. What it's doing right now is cataloging all of the intellectual property that's being put into it by all these corporations is being sent back to the big tech companies. So whether they say so or not, this is how it works. If you have Copilot turned on, you have an O365, whether it's an enterprise license or whether it's a local license, doesn't matter. The moment you turn on Copilot, it's sending everything to Microsoft. Everything you do on the screen, everything you interact with it, everything it does in all of the Microsoft programs, literally everything associated with the operating system is going back to Microsoft, whether you think so or not. So you have that collection effort going on. And then you also have the automation piece of it, right? So it's automating and correcting what you're saying, correcting your grammar, building your sentence structure, correcting the way that you structure the way you write. It's completely editing everything you're doing at the same time. All of that is influencing whether you think so or not, because they're building a portfolio on you and a profile on you that they can use to influence you in subtle ways. And that's just one aspect of it. From a business perspective, it's revolutionizing the way I do my job, right? So when I look at the threat, I have to go to three different or four different threat feeds and see what they're all seeing. You know, I see the Kaspersky, you know, attack report, which is just it's a really pretty graph, but it doesn't really tell you anything. But the threat feeds do tell you things. And so it's collecting the threat data. It's collecting the response actions. It's collecting all the communications in the company. It's collecting all the legal documents. It's able to scan legal documents and look for language that's not favorable to the company. Like I have an AI that we use that just goes through contracts and legal agreements and calls out all the things that are dangerous for the company. It does it in seconds, whereas it used to take me hours to go through contracts or to go through a, you know, data protection agreement or an NDA and look for anything in there that might be harmful to the company. It does it in seconds. At the same time, it'll go through a master services agreement and tell you, okay, these things should be taken out. These things are not doable, et cetera, because it's already got a profile of the company and what the company can do from service perspective or a product perspective. So not only does it know your product, it knows what your roadmap is. It knows what your company communications look like. It knows how your company communicates. And it's building a culture and a cultural profile of the company too. So you have that going on. And the other question is let's say Microsoft is lagging behind in whatever technology. They could literally go scrape from 100 companies in the tech world that are plugged into O365 and start reverse engineering what they're working on, or just steal it through their AI. And there's so many different facets of it that we take for granted, but it's replacing people within the organization. Like I foresee a time where companies won't need a compliance element, whether it's legal compliance, whether it's healthcare compliance, or whether it's security compliance. I could see a time where AI could completely replace that in the very near future. Like, what do you need 10 compliance analysts for when AI can do all that work? It can map all the controls. It can scrape the company's, you know, SharePoint site. It can scrape the company's data repositories, document repositories, file shares, everything, and find all the evidence it needs to populate all of these, you know, all the controls. as well as it can go and update the documents, sign the documents, and put it in as evidence and keep it current. And you don't need a person to do any of that. The only thing you need a person for is for the signature, if that's even going to be a thing, which I don't think it will be. So AI will replace the document companies, the, you know, the signing companies eventually, and that'll be all AI driven. It will replace all the compliance teams. It will probably replace some of the product teams, definitely some of the marketing teams, because it can plug into all the online services, all of the social media feeds. It can build the ad. It can build the images. It can build all of the ad language, and it can basically replace your entire marketing department in, you know, flip the switch. So those are just a few aspects of what are coming, right? So, and I think I went off on a tangent based on what you're saying.
That's a good primer, right? So you talked about marketing. So one of the interesting things, if you want to look kind of under the covers of what AI is capable of, marketing is a good way to research it, because it's kind of a hot thing right now. There's lots of articles about it online, and it's a benign subject, right? It's politically neutral. So you're not getting a lot of obfuscation. But from a marketing perspective, there was just a podcast, the Malware Bytes Lock and Code podcast. And the guy's talking about, you know, what does Facebook know about you? The outcome of that is lots of stuff, right? There's this meme that came out where there's a college kid sitting at a computer and Mark Zuckerberg's leaning over his shoulder, and the kid's looking up at Zuckerberg, and he's like, "My dad says you're a bad guy." And Zuckerberg looks at him and he goes, "Your dad's not your dad." Right. And the idea is that Facebook knows more about you than you know more, or than you know about you. It's true. So from a marketing perspective, this guy's like, "Hey, you know, based on my interactions with Facebook, which I stopped using 5 years ago or whatever."
There's longer than that for me. It's like 15 for me. I stopped using back in 9 or 10.
Yep. And so he went out and did all the research. And so he's like, "So, you know, I figured I hadn't touched this thing in a while." There, if you go to the Meta Data Center, you can look yourself up and see your data. And that's the funny thing about it. They just openly have it there. But anyway, there's like 3,000 companies that have his information and have leveraged their Facebook information to target or exclude him from advertising. The concept here is you take, you know, a digital profile of a person, you can tailor advertising directly to the individual with AI, because you can do it at scale, right? And so they're going to know that you really like fluffy bunnies. And when there's a fluffy bunny sale at your favorite store, which they know that you shop at, and your favorite store knows that you shop there and when you're going to shop and all of that, they're going to send you an ad and be like, "Hey, just for you, you know, fluffy bunnies are on sale." And they don't have to put it on sale for everybody. They can put it on sale just for you. And then they can hit you with, "Hey, and by the way, look at this other thing." Right. Yeah. And so we're talking about behavior modification or manipulation. They're using a profile of you to anticipate you, your actions, and then to get you to do something. And
Amazon already does it. They already do it. If you buy anything on Amazon, every time you go to Amazon, it'll show you the daily specials that are tailored just for you. And it'll show you the products that are tailored just for you with discounts that they know you're going to latch into. Right. And it's, if you're looking for something specific, like I've tailored my, you know, my shit fairy ordering to just things I know I need, but every company out there is doing it now, whether you're buying tools, whether you're buying sporting equipment, doesn't matter. All the retailers are using it, and it's the same algorithm. And you're right, it's tailored right to you. Like I can look at, in fact, I was comparing with my kids. We were looking at Amazon looking for something, and my kid was getting a different price than I was getting.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And it's not regional. That's tailored towards what your buying habits are.
Yeah. Well, and it's a profile as far as if you're an older person or you're a different, you have a different credit rating or something, like they can tailor it however they want, right? So, hey, you know, you probably remember this, but the funny thing is you go to the Iraqi markets, right? And they're like, oh, I have a special price for you. You go back and forth with them for a while and, you know, they'll start out at like $70 and you can negotiate them down to like 10 bucks, right? Well, with AI, you could do the same thing. You go down to, you know, Walmart or whatever, and jeans might be $100 for you, but they're going to be 15 for me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And exactly. Yeah. So anyway, there's a lot of different ways this can go. And so understanding that from an advertising perspective is important. But the other way to look at this is the exclusionary piece of it, right? And that's kind of the part where we're going to get into, you know, the more sinister side of things. But advertisers don't want to waste time on you, right? And so one of the things this guy mentions in the Lock and Code podcast is like, oh yeah, you know, Papa John's or somebody excludes me because I'm 700 miles from their market or whatever. And so they know that I'm nowhere close. And so they don't want to advertise to me. And it's an internet advertising model, right? So, I mean, that makes sense. I don't want to see ads for something that's three states away or whatever. And so, you know, it's going to save the company money. Well, exclusionary behavior is also important when you start thinking about like, okay, well, you know, if I am essentially blacklisted, and Google set all this up for the Chinese market, right? So here's kind of where we go the nefarious route, because it was done 20 years ago in China. You build a digital profile of somebody and you put them on the naughty list, and they're excluded from everything online that you don't want them to see. It doesn't mean that they can't get online. It means that they don't get the best prices. They're not allowed to shop certain places, or they go in and they're like, hey, I want to buy this. Nope, denied. You can't use your money, right? And so what happens very quickly with that is compliance. And people in China, you blacklist them, they kill themselves. Their life is over.
Yeah.
It's self-elimination.
Well, like it goes back to what we were talking about many times in the set rep, right? The social scoring system, if it doesn't like it, by the way, disregard me moving my camera around. I got shackled into a spare bedroom today, so I'm trying to get my studio put together.
I thought you were trying to find your good side.
No, there's no good side to that. I got to work with this. You know what I'm saying?
Face for radio.
Yeah, that's right. Face for radio. They turn you off. Like you don't eat, you don't move, and you don't work if you don't sign up for the social scoring system. And it's a thing. It's a real thing. So yeah, it's and the thing that's amazing about it to me is most people take it for granted, right? You know, everybody's freaked out about One ID. One ID's been around for almost 10 years. I mean, it's been around a long time. And it was designed, you know, for the same reason they have digital driver's license now. It's the same thing, right? It's all about digitizing everything and tokenizing everything. And it's been around for a very, very long time. What hasn't been around, like we were talking about the marketing stuff, that's called true one-to-one marketing. That's basically you market to the individual based on their profile. It's been around for 30 years, but it was all done manually based on, you know, demographic profiles, not individual profiles. And now with the ability to individualize everything, even the stream you see on Netflix, you don't think that's curated by AI? You go pick a war movie, or you go pick a romance, or you go pick a comedy, and that's all you're going to see in like six different lines of the streaming services. So all of those things have already been put in place along with the social scoring system. Now they're just doing it. And this Palantir thing is to decide who are the right-wing domestic extremists, right? That's where everybody's going with it. But there's a host of other things they can do with Palantir that you wouldn't even realize. Like suddenly you have a problem with your credit card. Suddenly you're on the domestic watch, or you're on the no-fly list. Suddenly you're being investigated by the FISA court. So all of your documentation, all of your finances, everything you've done goes right to the FBI. And you don't even know what's going on. It's in the background. And it's all done through AI. So there's there's a mountain of insidious things they could do with it. And the part for me that's, and we touched on this before the show, the part for me that is really, really scary. It's not, AI self-aware or it's sentient. If we ever see that, great. It's the fact that AI has no guardrails and it can be programmed any way they want it to learn. And it can run in the background and you wouldn't even know you're dealing with it. And it can influence, your healthcare, because I can see a host of healthcare applications for this, like prescriptions. Prescriptions are a pain in the ass. But if you've got AI that's doing the dispensing, it's all automated, guess what? It just runs down a conveyor belt, pops out, and you go look it up and pull your drugs out. You don't know what the hell you're getting. Most people are, you trust that the pharmacist is picking out the right medicine. Every so often they don't, but most of the time they do. But think about, they've digitized all the prescriptions now. And if you put AI in charge of that, and AI is evil, 10 milligrams of one drug mixed with 10 milligrams of another drug and in drug interaction. And guess what? You've got a bunch of dead people on your hands. So it's that kind of learning that can send it completely off the rails. And there's no guardrails whatsoever. And you said it before the show, which I firmly agree with. It's like the internet. Trump sees it from a business perspective. Take the guardrails off, get it out there, let's get it going. Because the people who know how to leverage it are going to be the ones that make money first. And the ones that make money first and figure out how to leverage AI to make things more efficient are going to dominate the market. That's his perspective. He doesn't even look at the tertiary, second, or third order effects of the evil side of that go along with the evil side of that, right? Just the first order effects if somebody trains it the wrong way, like OpenAI refusing to shut down. That is a huge, huge statement about how it was programmed, meaning it could decide for itself. Like, why would you ever give AI control like that?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And I mean, that previous conversation. So I was saying, I see AI like the invention of the internet. I think it's going to completely revolutionize and change the world. And 20 years from now, you're probably going to have AI everything, and it's going to be really good. I mean, as far as it's going to work and do what it's supposed to. The problem is to your point, it depends on who's telling it in the background what it's supposed to do, and that can vary wildly. And one of the things the pharmaceuticals are falling all over themselves to do right now is customizable cancer drugs and vaccines, right? So they're going to take your medical profile, load it into an AI database, and you're going to get something just for you, bespoke for the turbo cancer that you have, or the diabetes, that's what they or say. Whatever.
I think it's going to be the quickest way to kill you is what I think it's going to be, and that's why I was going down the pharmaceutical route, right?
Yep,
because they've already got it set up. The pharmaceuticals have already gone down the road of this is what we're doing, and I guarantee you the pharmacies are next. Because think about it. You spend, if you're like a Walgreens or your CVS and you're spending, $250,000 a year on a pharmacist and you have 10 of them, it's $1 million a year per pharmacy. And, mm-hmm. If you can cut that down to two pharmacists that's overseeing the AI to make sure everything is being dispensed right, the right drugs are going out and it's reading the scripts coming in correctly, then you just saved $750,000. And why not do that, right? So, yep.
Well, and it's easier to insure, right? So from a business perspective, if you're telling your insurance company, hey, AI does that, it's 99.999% accurate. You're not going to have a, lawsuit that the pharmacist mixed the thing wrong and killed somebody.
Yeah.
Great. Let's do it, right? What are you going to do? And so that's the thing is, I mean, they're going to put AI into these different things and you're not even going to know. I mean, they don't have to tell you.
That's part of it. The big, beautiful bill, right? The big, beautiful bill is they're giving unlimited indemnity to AI companies and the federal government. Why would they be doing that? Why would they do that now when AI hasn't even been rolled out? Unless they already know that they're going to be using AI for things that are going to be killing people. And if you go back to Larry Ellison, Scam Altman in the Oval Office, they answered your question right there. they're already setting up to move this into, to give the pharmaceuticals even more indemnity. And you know who's doing that? Susie Wiles.
Yep.
And they've already, so like you were just saying it, it's already there. They've already positioned it for tech they've already got there. And the other part about that that's scary is, what's the AI we don't know about? What's the military aspect of AI that we don't know about? How much autonomous AI driven, because we've had autonomous drones underwater, autonomous drones, you know, in space. We've had autonomous drones that are flying in the upper atmosphere for at least a decade. People, you know, and that's brings me to the Ukraine war, right? Everybody's freaking out about all these drones in the Ukraine war. That's low tech drones, right? We have high tech drones that operate in space for 2 years by themselves with no oversight.
Yep.
I mean, does it, they do, and I can't think of the platform it is, but they do orbital correction, orbital adjustment. They do orbital analysis. They do flight path adjustment. They look for and scan for objects in their path and adjust for objects in their path. And they can do, evasive maneuvers for a threat. That's already up there. It's been up there for, 10 years? So this tech's been around for a very, very long time. The question really comes down to is, what other autonomous platforms that are AI driven have they created, and how many uses do they have for it? Right. So there's a myriad of applications. And look, for this to be in a bill already means that they have a mountain of tech that they want to unleash on the American, on the planet. And ultimately, I think it's a lot of this is going to fail for a variety of reasons. But the biggest one is we're on the cusp of a reset and a revolution, whether people think so or not, whether people are awake or not. We are, because there's the balance has been off for so long, you know, tilted towards this. I don't even want to say it's nefarious, because it's just evil. Right. Mm-hmm. And here's where I'm going with this is I'm watching all the terraforming that's going on, because it's not climate. They're not engineering the climate. They're terraforming the planet. They're changing the weather patterns. They're changing the wind patterns. They're changing the environments. They're poisoning, the ground. They're poisoning the water system. And we don't have any idea of what the effects are, but you can bet that they've run all this through AI to calculate all the variables for all the things they're doing. And that's the military applications that I'm talking about, not the stuff like drones that are flying in space collecting. No, I'm talking about the stuff that they're using right now to terraform the planet and to change the cultures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and so one of the thing you were talking about, by the way, is the X-37. It's a Boeing product, space plane. Looks like a little tiny space shuttle.
Right. That's
So I guess one step back there is, so the difference between, a lot of people say drone and they just make assumptions. And so the difference between a drone, which is basically a radio controlled toy, because you have to have a human flying it remotely, versus a unmanned aerial system or autonomous weapon system, is vastly different. And so the thing might look or feel the same, but the difference is you have direct human interaction with one. And that's what you see with Ukraine, is they're taking basically what is meant as a commercial drone or a recreational drone that needs radio signals. And then you look on the Russian side, and they militarized that. So they took commercial drones, retrofitted them with fiber optic cables to control them, so there's no radio signal to jam, and then they're flying those, but they're still flying them. Whereas if you look at some of the systems the NATO countries are operating, they can pull up their software on the laptop and tell it, okay, you're here, I want you to go there, and execute mission profile 72.6. And, you know, that tells it like, okay, I know enough. I'm going to power up and take off and fly over there and fly in a circle at this altitude, at this pitch, so that I can, you know, observe the ground or whatever. I'm going to go fly into a car or something. And that's an autonomous weapon system where it's actually capable. And you think about that at scale with Palantir technology, you can take one or 100,000 and tell it, okay, go do that mission set, and they'll go, and that's it. Right. And so
they'll find these targets, identify them, and then destroy them.
Yeah. And I mean, there's all kinds of crazy variables, but to your point, like, that technology has been operational since the GWAT. So that's already combat proven.
Yeah.
And you know what the government is doing coming out of the intelligence community, I mean, they're you know, somewhere between 2 and 20 years ahead of what you think you know, depending on what kind of tech it is. So
just say 20.
We're well done.
20 at least. Yeah, they're 20 at least. And the part that people, a bulk of the public thinks that the military is always going to be on their side. They're not. It's just typically, if you go back throughout history, you'll see where, you know, the military's turned on their own people. They've been unleashed on their own people. And we've just been through 5 years of them basically filling the ranks of all of our institutions with, you know, for a better word, communists. And when you couple that with AI that gives them the ability to target, they don't need a lot of people to be able to keep the population under control. And I think a lot of what we're seeing, especially this pole shift stuff, I'm not sure how much of that I buy. I just, you know, I'll just say this about the pole shift thing. I've read a lot about it. I'm by far no expert, but I read about it. And here's the part that always brings me back to reality. The moon is like the beat cop for the Earth. When the Earth gets off axis, the moon acts as a buffer and a correction. And so this whole mantle shift and all this other stuff that they're talking about, I'm not sure how much of that's real, because the moon acts as a counterbalance to what the Earth's doing. And there's, you know, it's perfect size for our planet, perfect distance from our planet. A lot of things about it say it's artificial, but, you know, that's a whole different conversation. But the point I'm trying to make is they can use AI to create a bunch of narratives to keep us distracted while they're perfecting all these other technologies that they need to use to subdue the population. And that's a military application I see occurring right now. And it ties back to this, and it's rhetoric that's coming out of, I don't even know why people pay attention to any of the rhetoric coming out of DC. It's all BS. But 90% of what we're seeing, I'm going to say 98% of what we're seeing in social media, the news, any kind of streaming media, any print, it's all AI driven fiction. Because how much of, in fact, here's the real test is how many different images have you seen on social media where you can't tell the difference if it's AI driven or if it's a real picture? They're blurring the lines of reality with AI. And it's going to come a point where we're going to have to literally disconnect from all the technology just to figure out what's real. If, you know, viscerally touch it, that's where it's going. And when you look at that from a military application, the sky's the limit. Psychological operations, biological operations, chemical operations, kinetic operations, just take your pick. All of them can be drastically influenced very quickly by AI and eliminate the need for a soldier with a conscience. And that's the other part of AI. And where I see that going is I see all the psychological operations, a lot of the influencing operations, in fact, all the influencing and information warfare, all that being AI driven. In fact, we're already seeing it. We're seeing the AI war taking place in front of our face with the situation in Gaza and with the situation in Ukraine. We're already seeing AI driven stories, AI driven videos, AI driven conversations across social media. And people can't tell the difference.
Yeah. So you had to go there. You know,
we haven't got to UFOs yet, man. Let's go there.
I was just going to say, I'm pretty sure the moon is a hologram and it's actually a Borg ship that's cloaked. So ooh,
that's a good one, man. That's a good one. Borg ship.
Yeah. Well, because the Borg introduced themselves, you know, they've really been controlling the human race. That's a real thing. But they're the fictionalized, what we think of the Borg is just introducing us to the concept that there's a man machine amalgamation that actually is the AI and it controls all of us. So
I thought that was Zuckerberg. I thought he was the man machine interface that, you know.
No, he's a lizard person. He came up out of the ground.
That's right. They live in that person. I forgot which alien said he was part of. That's funny. I mean,
come on, keep it together, man.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So, you know, asking an interesting question about the terror attacks that have happened, right? I mean, you know, take a step back and ask yourself, like, okay, so in America, we have people that are radicalized enough that they're willing to go, you know, set other people on fire. And I mean, I my perspective is that's horrific and shocking in that it's been a long time in America since that kind of behavior was acceptable. I mean, multiple generations, right? A post, from my understanding of history, post emancipation, there were white supremacists that would do that kind of stuff to escape slaves, right? So there's been cases of it, but that's when it was more socially acceptable with a community of people. Like, okay, well, these people are bad. Let's light them on fire. That's cool. Great. There's this whole perception of like, oh, we've evolved past that. We wouldn't do that again. Well, or the perception of like, well, I do that kind of stuff in, you know, the Middle East and they're a bunch of barbarians or savages is a popular word that came out of Afghanistan.
Yeah.
But we're seeing it here. Well, why? Why are we seeing it here, right? Because I mean, when I went to college, there's all this sociology stuff about like, well, you know, it happens when people are hand to mouth, and you know, you just give them enough education and resources, and
the education people. Piece. Oh, as long as we educate people. Them, and give them a little culture and a little industry, they're going to be good to go.
Yeah, absolutely, and yeah, how's that working out, right? And so, you got to ask the question, like, okay, well, to your point. Why are these people being radicalized in America? Who's radicalizing them? I mean, you turn on the television. I mean, they're crazy, but they're not like, hey, you know, anybody that supports Israel, go light them on fire. Like, no. So where's that coming from? Well, it's coming from somewhere, right? And how are those people being targeted or drawn in or given that kind of information? Well, I can tell you that the you know, intelligence community spent countless amounts of money and time researching all of this stuff around 9/11 or post 9/11, right? Like, well, where do terrorists come from? Why are they terrorists? If you were a terrorist in the woods and you heard a tree fall, wait a minute, I'm going to need some more money so I can finish this over here. Yeah. Right. And so they sucked up all that money, and then you get Palantir and these other assholes. But they absolutely know how to influence behavior. And, you know, we can go around and is it the U.S. intelligence agencies or is it the Iranians? What? Who cares? The point is the capability exists and you're watching it happen. And I would tie into what you said about the military or police force. You know, people are saying like, oh, you know, the police in every, you know, extermination type civil war scenario, or just like, I'm just following orders. I'm just doing what they told me to do. Right. And same with the military. Well, you know, imagine a world where the military is educated to understand that the citizenry is evil for whatever reason, and that they are against them. And so you got to make sure that you treat them as hostiles and vice versa. Imagine a society where we're taught that, you know, the military has been brainwashed to hate us and they're going to kill us and, you know, eat our children or whatever. So if you have the capability to manipulate large swaths of people convincingly, which exists now, all you have to do is leverage that power. And so then
look at you COVID. Know, you don't think COVID was AI driven? It absolutely was.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Right?
And yeah. What, you know, what was the outcome? You had like three or four different large categories of people that would comply, not comply, would comply and then didn't comply, people that just checked out, leave me alone.
Well, most of us were like, fuck it, I'll just stay home. Right. Yeah. But there was a swath of the poor population that I'm going to say was entitled and empowered to be the Karens. And it was all AI driven, every bit of it. All the talking points, all the narratives, all the media push, it was all coordinated. And I said this before on the situation report, that you can't have that wide of coverage across the planet where everybody's saying exactly the same thing without a lot of coordination. And AI can do that, coordination, influencing. It can even write all the messaging before you can even shake a stick and distribute it everywhere. And we've seen the influencing operation. We're seeing it now. Look at the influencing operation about this big, beautiful bill. They mobilize all their resources, and then all of the AI turns on and the bots turn on in social media, and there's point and counterpoint, right? And the one they want you to nudge towards always seems to be the stories that you see more. Oh, it's going to help us. If the tax cuts are institutionalized, humma, humma, right? It's all AI-driven narrative, all of it.
Yep. Well, and what's interesting is you see a lot of, if you follow the influencer communities, even some of these people that are, you know, realizing that they were duped and they were handed, you know, fake Epstein stuff. And, you know, they're like, hey, we got it. Yay. I mean, those exact people were in X commenting on this big, beautiful bill stuff. Like, hey, we've been duped. Like, this is a lie. It doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat. Like, they're literally squabbling over your money and screwing you, like, as a taxpayer. Mm-hmm. Like, hello, wake
up. Who gets to screw you more? Yeah.
And I mean, that, so they're essentially getting wise to it, but you're not seeing that in the news at all. Right. And so there's a narrative of, oh yeah, the Republicans are, you know, evil and they're going to take away, you know, Social Security or Medicare or whatever. And, meanwhile, the influencer community or the truth community is like, hello, like we've been screwed here. Like, you know, Trump is not doing what he said he was going to do. And, you know, whether or not it's Trump, that's debatable. But the fact of the matter is...
that's a PSYOP too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the whole... destroying the whole mega movement.
Yeah.
What a better way to destroy the mega movement than to create a bunch of narratives, false narratives and positive, you know, real narratives that depict Trump as a traitor. I mean, right. It's exactly what they did to Mike Pence. And, you know, Mike Pence deserved it because he is a traitor. But... a lot of what I'm just like the MAHA stuff, right? I'm seeing the same thing for MAHA. What are they really doing for the American people? Have they banned mRNA? No, they just approved the new mRNA, the self-replicating, which is dangerous as hell. Yep. And they're pushing that.
Right.
So that, you know, that's true.
Yep.
Because it's actually a signed document. So you're already seeing it happening right in front of you. And that's why I said Trump's created an existential crisis for himself. Because he came in with all these promises, and you know the AI messaging that's working against him is just as powerful as the truth that's working against him too.
Right.
So he's created the perfect storm that I think is going to blow up in his face. And
yeah,
well, ultimately, and I think that's what's going to lead to the demise of the society, is the fact that you can't propagate and continue to propagate these competing narratives, for lack of a better word, without, first of all, when people get exhausted and then they get disenfranchised, that's when they go off the reservation. And we're rapidly approaching that culmination point.
Yeah. And you only need 10 to 15% of a population for an armed revolution.
Yeah.
Historically speaking. So well, even the American
3%, remember it was only 3%. But
yeah.
Yeah.
You look at the American Revolution, right? And the narrative that's sold is like, oh yeah, you know, all the patriots got together and were like, we're going to fight the British. And that's not what happened. It was a small percentage of colonists that were like, screw this. So, yeah. And I think that's kind of the point here, right? So what do? So what, right? And the point is you need to understand the landscape, and you need to understand that there is absolutely going to be shaping and manipulation. And I think the key strategy is going to be divide and conquer. And so developing that sphere of influence with people, I mean, I don't know if there's a lot you're going to be able to do to counter that. Because that dividing people is very effective, and it's been an effective strategy. And so, you know,
for hundreds of years,
forever,
divide and conquer. Yep.
But you need to find the people around you that seem like safe, sane, logical people, and figure out who the ones that are not. So, you know, who to stay away from, when things go sideways, and, understand that, you know, pretty much anything in the information space can be manipulated and is going to be plugged in the future. And so, you know, what does that look like? I mean, people always want kind of a recipe of like, well, what's the one thing that I can do? Pay attention, because it's going to, mileage is going to vary greatly depending on your age, your geographical location, your economic capabilities, you know, your skill sets. But the first thing is to start paying attention and start building a community of people around you and learning about those skill sets. And, you know, on the
I would let me add to that, because you're in a very salient point. Not just build a community of people, build a community of people that have a moral compass. They have ethics, they have self-discipline, and they have the ability to work with other people and communicate with other people and accept ideas and accept opinions that may not jive with their own, but align with their cultural and their moral compass. Because that's one of the biggest things that I see with AI and AI influencing operations, is that it's very effective at disrupting any kind of unity. It's exceptionally good at it, right? Because what's the first thing you do when you're influencing? You're trying to divide the public into groups. You put those groups against each other. And, you know, there was a book years ago by William Johnstone. It was a men's action book. He had a whole series of them. But the first book, called Out of the Ashes, talks about this very concept and how the society that's going to come out of the ashes from whatever's left over when this society crashes is going to be a society of people who have an unbreakable moral compass and a community value system where nobody has to be in charge. Everybody's self-reliant. They have self-discipline and self-governance, and they have, you know, law-abiding tendencies, or at least, you know, rule-abiding tendencies, and they're self-reliant in every way, shape, and form they can be, to where they don't need other people, but they want to be in a community with like-minded people, basically the best and brightest. And that's not a conservative, and that's not a liberal thing. That's people who live by a compass that's not politically driven in any way, shape, or form. It's all driven off your moral compass and your ability to exercise self-discipline, because that's the one thing that they bred out of our society, is self-discipline. How many people do you know that do not have the ability or the capacity to regulate their behavior, regulate their actions, or regulate any of their impulses? There's a large swath of the population that's been bred to just instant gratification. It's what social media is about. It's what television's about. It's what the movies and all of the other forms of media are about. It's about enforcing and instilling self-gratification. So you're on the right topic. Keep going.
So Paul Harvey used to say, self-government doesn't work without self-discipline. It seems like a salient point. So what I was going to say is, you know, in the pre-internet world, it takes years and years to cultivate intelligence assets. And it's because it's about relationship building, right? So you get to know people that you want to get to do something for you or that are going to support you or whatever. And those basic principles are true here, right? So, you know, you need to know the people around you. And that's not a you know, swipe right on Tinder and spend an evening together, and then, oh, okay, check that one off. That is a years long process. And, you know, you talk about divide and conquer. And I mean, there's so many parents that I know that sent their children off to college, and then they're like, I didn't get my kid back. Like, they came back with purple hair and pronouns and, you know, hate everybody and don't trust anybody. And it's like, well, yeah, because they were indoctrinated, right? And they had 4 years to do it. But it takes time to get to know people and to know who the people are you want to be around and who the people are that you want to avoid. And that's kind of my position, is you need to spend time and energy consciously working on that. Now would be the time to do that. And it's not a short-term thing. That's a long-term thing.
Very much so, right? Because our AI can influence people quickly, right? Because it doesn't need time to cultivate a relationship. It can figure out through all of your social media presence, through all of your different activities online, through your pen spending, it could figure out exactly how to influence you and pressure buttons based on all that information, right? Whereas we have to spend years building and cultivating those relationships and building trust, which is the word you were getting to, is trust. And it's hard to do, right? Because look, when this finally collapses, there's going to be three populations of people: those who don't know how to do anything and, you know, die immediately, those who do know how to do things and have strong communities that are, you know, built on everything outside of the greed-based system that we have and monetary system we have. And then you're going to have a group of people in the middle that are looking for the group that's surviving. And they're going to be chameleons when they come in. That's why building those communities and relationships right now is so important, because when this all kicks off, you're not going to be able to vet people. People are going to change as fast as money changes hands when they're hungry. And you're going to have to really be careful about who you bring into your communities. That's why doing it now is so important, and paying attention to who you bring in and vetting people and spending time with them and making human connections. That's why I've beat the drum and fight for 5 years about it, right? Is that community is you're not going to survive by yourself, but you are going to survive by community. And I was talking to a guy today about doing a show, because I want him to be one of the hosts that does a show. And he made a very interesting point, and that is all of these billionaires go out, and I had heard this and I haven't really paid attention to it, but all these billionaires go out and the first thing they do after they build their bunker and build their security force and build their circle of friends, use that loosely, they go and they get a psychiatrist, and they say, what are all these people going to do as soon as the balloon goes up and my money doesn't mean anything? And they're like, you're going to be the water boy. They're going to take over, and you're not going to be the guy that's sitting in the chair. Because when you don't have money, none of them respect you. They're just doing it for the money. But they're going to band together and have their own little ecosystem outside of you. And that's very true, right? Mm-hmm. So, and look, I've worked for a couple of billionaires, and I can tell you that just in the limited time that I was doing contract work for them, I saw a very, very similar pattern with all of their employees. And I'll use Paul Allen for a perfect example, because I did a lot of volunteer work for the Allen Aviation Museum up in Seattle. And he would come in, he had an entourage of people around him, that he had one person come in and figure out the shortest number of steps he had to take so he could maximize the amount of time he was on the floor doing his whatever he was doing. And then he had somebody figure out how long it would take him to get to the car and go to his next thing. And he have it all timed out, to include lunch, lunch, dinner, everything. His day was completely planned out and walked out by somebody on his staff. And none of them really much cared for the guy. In fact, most of them didn't like the guy at all. And another swath of them were just there for the paycheck and they didn't care. They got over any way they could and they just didn't care. And then I saw another one where literally everybody on the staff was taken from them. Everybody. It was a culture. And so that example really does play out in real life. And that's exactly what I see playing out for all these billionaires that go into their hole. Somebody's got to dig them out and somebody's got to do stuff for them while they're underground because they don't know how to do anything. So that's not going to work out for them. And that's why building a community of people that actually have a moral compass and a value system is going to be way more beneficial than building a deep hole somewhere and trying to wait it out. It's just not real. And, you know, there's a divine aspect of this too, right? There's the spiritual aspect. We can get to that in the next show because I think we're at a good wrap up point. But any final thoughts on, you know, what people should be doing right now to prepare for all these different changes that are going to happen?
Yeah, well, I think we were kind of talking about this the other day, but I don't think there's a good answer to AI. There's not a, well, what do I do about it? It's like, well, I don't know if there's anything you can do about it. It's like seeing the internet coming. Like, well, you know, it's early 90s and there's this new thing that you can hook your computer to your telephone line. Like, well, what does that mean? Right. And so I think that focusing on the internal, the smaller community is what we should be looking at. I mean, you need to understand the threat and understand how, regardless of, you know, you could completely unplug, but anything that you do in your life, those organizations, institutions, entities are probably going to be plugged in, kind of like your bank, right? Your bank's hooked into the internet, it's hooked into the government, and so on it goes. So you can't just unplug and go live in a hole in the ground. That's just not realistic. So understand that the technology is rapidly changing. You don't get to pick who's going to wield it for good or for evil. And that the counter to that is focusing on developing real relationships. And I mean, if you're a millennial person, I think the first challenge is developing some social skills to develop personal relationships. And I'm not kidding about that. Like, start learning. Because that's an important thing. You know, the other thing that I've seen a lot of is, there is a lot of division and they're the millennial or younger generation. There's a narrative of the old people screwed you. You're never going to be able to have a house. You're not going to have a life. You're not going to find anybody because of the older people. They took all the resources and they screwed you. And then conversely, the millennials want to take everything from you. They're all brainwashed, purple-haired idiots. You know, both of those narratives are right, and they're both wrong. And the thing is if you play that out, you know, what situation are you going to find yourself in? It's not going to be good. So realize that, you know, there are people that are different from you that you need to get to know well enough to understand if they have good character.
Yeah,
because that's what matters, right? Yep. And realize that, you know, how do you know you're not being manipulated? I know that I am being manipulated, right? And that's exactly the point. And so, you know, don't go too far in either direction. I know as well as the next person that, you know, what I think is true may or may not actually be true. And having that self-awareness is important. And that's kind of the point, is you need to develop that and then leverage that information, that introspection, to go out and meet other people and give them enough latitude to understand their character and start building your community. That's what you need to do.
Absolutely. And on that, we'll end this. I appreciate you jumping on. I appreciate us finally getting our schedules to coordinate. Housekeeping notes, I'll follow this up with a Substack probably this weekend. Until then, God bless everyone. One team, one fight.